Welcome to the Magic and Alchemy Podcast, where we talk about witchcraft, setting intentions, forgotten folklore, and mythology. Created by Tamed Wild, Magic and Alchemy is a collection of stories, rituals, and articles crafted by a variety of creators and writers, including myself, Kate Ballou, and my co-host, Kristen Lisenby.
Hello, and welcome back to the Magic and Alchemy Podcast. I'm Kristen Lisenby.
And I'm Kate Ballou.
Happy Beltane, Kate. Blessings on this first day of May. How are we feeling? What's going on?
Hello, Kristen. Happy Beltane. Happy Beltane listeners. Welcome back, fairies, blessed revelry friends, and happy Hawthorns. How's your Mercury day?
Well, you know, it's sunny. I'm here with you. I can hear birds singing on my roof. I have laundry hanging on the line. Truly a cottagecore moment over here after a week of spring storms. I'm going to do some gardening after we record today. So yeah, it's a great Mercury day. I can't believe it's Beltane. I know we're recording this a little bit early, but I feel like the Sabbat really snuck up on me this year.
I actually have a very similar vibe going here in New York, so I love that for us.
Yeah.
Laundry on the line, sun outside.
Spring cleaning, you know?
It's happening. We're doing it. So I have our listener question today. Someone actually reached out this morning asking if a full moon happens in your sun sign, if this makes it kind of a more intense moon for you, which I thought was an interesting question. And I would love to talk about this because I see questions like this crop up, especially just around the full and new moons. You know, I'm just such a firm believer, and I have to say this, that astrology is never good or bad, and, you know, that we have these transits and birth charts as tools to help us process the world around us and navigate the experiences that we're having and the energies that we're feeling. So not good or bad, not more or less intense necessarily, but these transits can impact us or influence us in different ways, which can, you know, feel more strongly for us or play out in a variety of ways in our lives. And so I would love to share some astrological tools for folks to dive deeper.
Oh, yes, I would love that, please.
Okay, perfect. So we are recording this episode during the full moon in Scorpio. So happy full moon in Scorpio, friends, in the past. And folks will often reach out about their sun, moon, rising signs, especially during moons that overlap with their natal charts. So when a transit is happening astrologically, I'd love to invite you to look at the stories between the two placements to really kind of help set the scene in your life. So for example, if there's a Scorpio full moon or a new moon like today, full moon today happening on your sun sign, it's a really good idea to consider what the sun means or represents in the birth chart, right? So your sun sign represents your identity and who you are in the world. So if there's a Scorpio full moon, this might signify or signal the releasing of old identities, a way that you appear kind of more full or whole in who you are, a moment of celebration or maybe a realization. If there's a new moon, it might denote a new beginning or the reset of something in your identity. So if it's happening in conjunction with your moon sign, it might bring up themes of your emotional body, your feelings, how you process these emotions, because the moon represents your feelings, your emotions, who you are in that way. And then if it happens with your rising sign, it might bring up stories about how you show up in the world, your identity, your appearance, how others perceive you. So if you want to know more about the story of an astrological transit, do some research about the transit. So for example, Moon in Scorpio can bring about intensity, empowerment, depth of feeling of emotion, and then do some research on your natal position. So for example, study what it means to be a Scorpio rising and then see the story that you can build from the two building blocks of your research. You can kind of think of it like painting a picture. You layer on different images, colors, energies, and perspectives until you get a more clear insight into the astrological moment. Kristen, what do you think?
Well, I just think this is a beautiful and perfect example of why we all need at least one friend who is astrologically literate, you know, just reminding us to be aware of the astrological weather, and also how to dig deeper in practical ways. So thank you for all of these suggestions and these insights.
So happy to be that friend. Thanks for letting me ramble. But the astrology of April was wild. We had eclipses, we had retrogrades, we had, you know, once in a lifetime planetary alignments and conjunctions. So if you're feeling a little celestially bedraggled, my friends, I totally get it. And same. So take care of yourselves, drink water, journal. You've got this. Mm-hmm. And Kristen, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, first of all, celestially bedraggled is going to be my new favorite thing. But today, in the spirit of the Beltane season, as we step across the threshold of a new month, we're going to talk about the patron saints of spring.
At threshold moments and in sacred seasons, it's powerful to have figures and old stories to escort you through. During this episode, I'm going to call on the Lady of the Lake of Arthurian legend and explore her roles as enchantress, wild woman, and fairy queen. And what about you, Kristen?
Well, in my eternal search for the wild ones, the spirits who guard our forests and trees, I'm going to talk about Faunus and Fauna, two deities from Roman lore who speak in the language of the wildwood. If you plan to spend some time in the woods this Beltane season, exploring the groves and wild gardens of spring, and if you sense a presence or hear whisperings amidst the trees, it might be Faunus. It might be the spirit of the woods. As one of the primordial deities from Roman myth, Faunus is ancient, even by immortal standards. Like other spirits that personify wildness and the fertility of land and body, people suggest Faunus is responsible for the generative and regenerative power of nature. Something I've also heard people comment about Flora, a goddess of the Elysian fields, who was sometimes rumored to be Faunus's lover, and Venus, our goddess of love and the mother of roses. And like these goddesses, the god Faunus lives unrestricted, without bounds. He cannot and will not be contained. Which is ironic, as Faunus is the grandson of Saturn. Today we often talk about Saturn as a spirit of time and order, whereas Faunus is wild and rustic. Saturn wears the crown of Father Time. This much is true, yet much of Saturn's magic lives beneath our feet, where he tends to our agricultural roots. Saturn is a land tender. He is a reaper. He draws abundance from the earth through the seeds we sow and the time sacrificed at his altar. Yet, while Saturn's gardens are orderly, his daily routine set in stone, his seedlings all perfectly labeled, or so I imagine, Faunus tends to the gardens of chance, the ones that spring up in the forests and are pruned by the wind and cared for by the wildwood. His sacred groves are the most ancient. People would nap beneath his trees to receive oracular insights. Sleeping in the garden of Faunus bestows psychic abilities, and he prefers our dreamscapes as his stage. Though, a warning to the wise, say some people, because invoking this deity can induce nightmares, initially, as his energy can overwhelm, overstimulate, be feral and passionate and loud. The nymph Canons, a goddess of song, was Faunus's mother. Etymologists suggest that the name Canons comes from the Latin canere, meaning to sing, with the additional nuances of celebrating, chanting, and foretelling. The same root gives us both chant and incantation. Faunus's mother is mostly talked about in regard to her husband, Picus, but I think it's important to highlight Canon and her voice specifically, which was said to be powerful enough to stop a rushing river, move boulders, and calm the wildest of creatures. When Canon died, mourning her husband, she did so mid-song. As the story goes, the goddess Circe, a powerful witch of transformation, fell in love with Picus, and one day she confessed her love to him. But Picus was married, and he refused Circe's advances. In retaliation, Circe transformed Picus into a woodpecker, and when Picus went missing, Canons died from a broken heart. But her spirit is still searching for her husband. She exists as a ghostly song called The Voice of the Woods. Faunus's father, Picus, was a Roman king of Latium, a region in Italy that later became Rome. King Picus is where we get our Saturnian connection, as he is Saturn's son. And I think this cosmic connection is evident in Picus's gifts, one of them being augury. Augury is also known as ornithomancy, and I just wrote about this magical practice in April's Moon Letter in regards to the raven, but this method comes from the Greek ornis, meaning bird, and manteia, meaning divination. Practitioners of ornithomancy or augury noted a bird's arrival, its appearance, demeanor, flight pattern, and even their conversations, the language of the birds. So, in some ways, both of Faunus's parents are deities of song, and specifically, the songs that nest in our trees. In Judica Isles' Encyclopedia of Spirits, she writes that Faunus is the ancient essence of the forest, so primordial that he is pre-verbal. Faunus doesn't talk. He cannot communicate as a human does, but speaks through forest noises and nature sounds. Just like song predates a spoken language, the messages of Faunus exist in the birdsong and the rustling leaves, the dialect of the wild, which, as we know, is far older than human speech. In episode 107, Satyrs and Centaurs, part of our mythical creature series from season 3, I did a deep dive into the famous satyr Pan, who is considered the Greek counterpart of Faunus. We haven't talked about this deity's appearance yet, but often Faunus and Pan are half man, half animal. HistoryCollective.org describes satyrs as short, half-man, half-goat, or horse, like creatures with horns, tails, and long furry ears. In art, satyrs are always naked and depicted as animalistic and hideous. They lived in remote forests and hills and could always be found engaging in drunken revelry or chasing nymphs. Satyrs were the companions of the Greek god of the vine, Dionysus, and the god Pan. Being the companions of Dionysus, they represented the luxuriant vital powers of nature. They are rather unsavory characters, it says, having been described by Hesiod as being mischievous, good for nothing, little men that were unfit for work. End quote. Pan was traditionally described as a horned god, although his counterpart Faunus did adopt this characteristic. The oldest depictions of Faunus will show him without horns. In Roman myth, satyrs were known as fauns, although they are not the good-for-nothing little men that Hesiod describes. Faunus oversaw all the fauns who weren't necessarily his children per se, but ghosts of the forest. And I love this description, fauns as woodland ghosts, because this makes them feel more fae-like to me, more like guardians or land spirits instead of these immature, naked tricksters. Although I do think, you know, the tricksters have a place in story, as we talked about in our episode, Trickster Tales. But I think that prankster energy is just one really small element in the fauns' much more intricate story. In the old world, if you honored the god Faunus, you almost always did so alongside one of his lady friends like Juno or Flora, or more often his feminine counterpart, Fauna. Fauna is either Faunus's sister, his wife, or his daughter. And like him, she lived in the wild and was a spirit of the forest and fertility. She was also prophetic, serpentine, sometimes called Fatua, and associated with the fates. Fauna was in charge of the Fauna Mysteries, a woman-only mystery cult where no trace of a man was allowed. This means that there were no pictures of men, not even male animals around, and men who dared to partake or even try to witness these rites, usually dressed as women, were persecuted. Fauna's mysteries were mystical rites, and their secrecy was protected by law. And to further express how important this event was, the Encyclopedia of Spirits says that Fauna's annual mystery was held in the home of Rome's leading magistrate under the direction of his wife, who was assisted by the Vestal Virgins. I couldn't find much more information about Fauna's mystery cult, although I have to wonder, given her earth-centric spirit, you know, was it similar to Floralia, filled with dancing and games and dedicated to pleasure, or was it closer to Persephone and Demeter's Eleusinian mysteries, where initiates sought answers to what lied beyond the veil of physical death? And while I will need to continue this search, I did find several references to people journeying to Fauna's temple, not only for these rites, but for healing rituals and guidance. Medicinal herbs grew all around Fauna's temple, her plants tended to by the snakes, loyal priestesses of this goddess, and so many others. Over time, Fauna would eventually evolve into the more widely known Faunadea, or the Good Goddess. And in this form, the goddess's spirit wasn't contained within a single entity, but a group of female spirits exclusively honored by women.
Hey witches, Shelby here. I'm the creatrix of Tamed Wild, and I wanted to jump in here real quick to let you know about a new offering we've put together for you all. Born from the desire for community and a safe place to share and grow in our practices, I bring you The Coven. The Coven is an online community safe from the eyes of social media, where we can gather, share, learn, and connect. We can really be ourselves. Led by the Tame Wild team, each week members receive 6 new offerings, including a live check-in call, a downloadable grimoire page, an audio meditation, astrological insight, collective tarot reading, and journaling and shadow work prompts. Additionally, each month members receive a PDF workbook focused on growing your spiritual practice, a tarot spread for the month, and a 60-minute live gathering where we share in ceremony, ritual, or education. The membership is loaded with offerings, and the space that holds it is incredible. With discussion boards and a live chat feature, there's always someone there to connect with. Membership is $26 a month, and you can try it free for 7 days. Visit tamedwildcoven.com for more information. We're really excited about this offering, and we hope to see you there. Now, back to magic and alchemy.
To me, Beltane is always a season of the fairies. Associated with hawthorn blossoms and parties that go wild into the night, this season reminds me of my own wildness, sensuality, and expressions of such. My magic began with the fairies, and so to return to their stories always brings me a great joy, because in their myths that stretch across cultures and the globe, the fairies always have a secret and a story to share, or a few. I remember being enamored with the Lady of the Lake at an early age when my dad told us the stories of Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table. Of course, I was looking for the women in the stories and found the Lady of the Lake and Morgan le Fay. This moniker, Lady of the Lake, is used by several different characters from Great Britain, all fairy in origin. However, she is a prevalent character in the story of King Arthur, as she is the one who gifts Arthur Excalibur, the sword, imprisons Merlin in a tree, and takes a dying Arthur to Avalon. The sacredness of water is always important, even essential in magic, but in spring it takes on a different form. As the snow melts, the earth softens, and the spring rains come, water represents life, mystery, and this changing season, and so I find the story of this lady to be a fitting reminder of the myths that live in the waters. These characters take on many forms. In one story, she is three, Nimue, Vivien, and Ninian. In another, she's linked with the cult of Diana, a story that medieval Europe would have been familiar with, the wild goddess of the hunt, the Roman version of the Greek Artemis, goddess of the moon, childbirth, the stag, and the wild. And in some stories, the Lady of the Lake is also linked with Morgan and her story, and in others, Rhiannon, the Welsh horse goddess. Eileen Mirage, in her essay, Nimue in Fairy Queens, edited by Sarita D'Este and David Rankine, writes, quote, she is represented as an example that some things are better left alone. One can assume that her role is consistent with an archetypal goddess of magic and nature. She is a dangerous force that cannot be tamed. Of course, all stories have ancient origins, and the Lady of the Lake is no different. In a parallel Greek myth, the sea nymph Thetis is the mother of Achilles, one of the greatest warriors ever. And this nymph similarly provides her son with magical powers, much like how Lancelot receives a ring that protects him from evil magic. One scholar notes that the Roman fort named Abalava, known to the Britons as Avalana, may have been the origin of the magical Avalon. And yes, this fort was dedicated to the Roman water goddess Dea Lattis. Some stories speak of the biblical origins of Lancelot's bloodline, stating that Mary Magdalene and Jesus may be the ancestors of the 6th century Comtesse of Avalon named Vivien del Aux of the Water, whose three daughters are associated with the mothers of Lancelot, Arthur, and Gawain, known as the Ladies of the Lake. Upon closer inspection of Vivien del Aux and her story, it appears that she was married to the bard Taliesin, the famous figure from Ceridwen's story. The goddess Ceridwen is also famous for her relationship with stories and poetry brewed in her cauldron, and her relationship with the lake, the sacred waters of Bala by which she lives. In another essay in Fairy Queens, Writing Fairy, A Tale of Vivien by Jack Wolfe, Wolfe denotes Vivien as another expression of this fairy queen, saying, quote, one of the most subtle members of the fairy courts of Britain and France, whose mythos is often overshadowed and even, on occasion, conflated with that of her more famous or infamous cousin, Morgan le Fay, Vivien, also known as Nive, Nimue, and Ninian, in the French Vulgate Romance tales, which were written in the 13th century, Vivien is the beautiful young fairy who enchants the enchanter, Merlin, in the forest of Brioque, learning his stories in exchange for the assumably frank promise of her love and the freedom of her body. End quote. Fairies love to turn the stories on their head, to remind us that not all is always as it seems, and things are better this way. The more I dove into the stories of the Lady of the Lake, the more reflections in the waters I found, the more refractions, droplets caught by the sun, a multitude of waves and tides of stories I couldn't quite tease apart, undoubtedly a reminder of the mysteries and stories and all of their interpretations. Eileen Mirage wrote, quote, Nimue's origins are in fairy lore, but her evolution mirrors that of the fairies. She starts as a supernatural force of nature, wild and untamed, and then is glorified when she lets herself be bound into the role of the courtly wife of a knight, finally becoming a temptress who is completely villainized in a Puritan society. The social views on fairies follow a similar evolution. In medieval times, belief in them was still alive, and their power was similar to that of old pagan gods, morally ambiguous. End quote. So this spring, as one of your patron saints of the season, connect with the Lady of the Lake, Vivian, Nimue, whether through her stories as a goddess, as a mystery, or as a fairy queen. Peer into her waters, scrying with a lake nearby you, and asking what myths, support, and magic the surface's reflection may offer you. Be wild, refute the single definition, and learn how to cast your own spells. If you bring an offering to her waters, perhaps you'll receive a message of the season, a sword, much like Arthur's.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Magic and Alchemy, a podcast from Tamed Wild. Again, we're Kristen Lisenby and Kate Ballou. You can find us online at Easton Alchemy and at K8 Ballou. Send us all of your questions, comments, or just say hello via email at podcast@tamedwild.com. You can view all the amazing offerings from Tamed Wild on their Instagram at Tamed Wild or on the blog tamedwild.com.
Join us back here in 2 weeks for another magical conversation. Just a reminder that magic and alchemy are always available to those who know where to look for it. So mote it be or something better. Until next time.